Go.
Great. I will introduce Sarah Figliozzi with the Portland Bureau of Transportation. And this is a briefing on pretty interesting projects that have been going on up and down the West Coast. They've landed in Portland. I'll let Sarah take it from there.
Great. All right, thank you. So I'm here to brief you on the Street Seats project, pilot project that PBOT launched as of August. So I want to sort of tell you about some of the three installations that have been on the ground since then, talk a little bit about what we see in other cities. And then really the point being here is to try to get some input from this group in terms of what you might recommend in terms of design guideline recommendations as we move forward. So again, it's a pilot project. We'll be evaluating it this winter and then looking for, again, whether or not we move forward with a permanent program, and if we do, what type of modifications we might see. Yeah. So generally, what are Street Seats? I told you in August we launched this pilot project. We've been calling them Street Seats, but really it's modeling it after the Parklet program, a successful program we've been seeing in San Francisco, as well as New York, Montreal, Oakland, Long Beach, Denver. There's a very long list of both large and small cities, Montreal, as well in Europe as well. So the essential concept is that it's a temporary platform that extends the sidewalk into the parking lane, only the parking lane. You know, in Portland, our parking lane is 8 feet wide. It's flush with the curb, and it allows for additional seating, cafe seating, landscaping. And you really see in other cities a variety of different uses there. They can be built a variety of different designs, different materials, mostly wood and concrete pavers is what we've seen. And then, of course, it can include landscaping, built-in seating, tables, chairs, bike parking, et cetera, et cetera. And it certainly varies, some very creative iterations in San Francisco specifically. I want to throw this slide up, you know, just sort of why is PBOT doing this? Why is this something that we're interested in? We've been approached by a number of advocacy groups asking if we will permit this type of activity on the streets since about 2008. Obviously, PBOT manages the public right-of-way. We also manage the cafe street seating program. And we do see street seats, parklets, this concept as increasing the vitality of the street and adding to the vibrancy of the city, which is part of our mission. Just want to go through what this pilot project is. You know, again, we didn't launch it until August, and we recognize that that is late in the season, and it meant that a lot of businesses who wanted to participate couldn't. It didn't make sense in terms of the financial investment of designing and building a facility and getting it on the ground within our relatively short summer. I mean, actually, this was probably a perfect year for that. But our point was really to see if we could get some facilities on the ground so we had some concrete examples to take a look at that we could evaluate, so we could get some feedback from the public. So we weren't dealing with a hypothetical program, getting feedback for that. So we recognize it was late in the season. The pilot started in August. It ends December 31st. We've put a cap at 15. Granted, we've only seen three installations so far. So a limited timeline. In terms of the process, the applicants submit design drawings. They submit programming. What exactly are they envisioning for that space? A demonstration of public outreach. Liability insurance of $1 million. I think I mentioned the program ends December 31st. It will be evaluated this fall and winter, looking at what's been the interest in the program, feedback from community stakeholders, business community, and looking at the parking impact as well. And one thing that we definitely want to make clear, because it's an interesting change, is that unlike San Francisco and New York, this Street Seats program we actually allow the extension of cafe seating permits. So that means we're allowing table service. It's a very clear distinction from San Francisco and New York, which say these are public spaces. The tables and chairs actually have to be different than if there's existing cafe seating on the sidewalk of the establishment. Very much these are public spaces. And that's also why they're called parklets, right? And that's part of the reason why we came up with this street seats name, in the sense of we recognize that these are not necessarily public spaces. However, we do still feel that adding cafe seating to our streets adds to the vibrancy. And so that was something we wanted to pilot. So it's a bit of background there.
Context to that GBD project we looked at 2 weeks ago, where they were putting the dining in an area of the building frontage that was set public. And we were asking about how to be public if you restrict the access to people who are eating there and paying retail.
Right.
You just call it a parklet.
No, that should have been. Because
does that happen in the reverse? Like, I think that's what she's saying. Right of way. Was it public
right of way that was in?
That was private.
They were calling it a parklet to satisfy some park requirements for the building. Oh,
interesting. So sort of the reverse then.
For a cafe or a restaurant.
Right. And so, I mean, one thing to point out is that, again, okay, so this is a pilot, but what we would envision is probably annual permits. So for this pilot, we took existing policies that we already had, so the encroachment permit, approving encroachment into the public right-of-way for the platform, and then if the applicant wanted to extend cafe seating, then they could extend an annual cafe seating permit into that space. So we've told people, and we do have one example. So the last installation that was installed outside of Mississippi Pizza, while they did extend a cafe seating permit, they have signed it so that such that it says this is open to our patrons, but it is open to the public as well. However, the cafe seating permit allows them to do that table service. It also allows them to apply with the OLCC and have liquor out there, or whatever their agreement might be.
How's that come across? If somebody sits down with their like 3-year-old kid, and the OLCC says you can have a drink out on that parklet, is that working?
It would be absolutely. It's the exact same rules that apply to existing cafe seating. So if that's okay, based on the OLCC rules, depending on what they serve, whether it's hard or, you know, and I don't
that,
know.
That happens at restaurants now, though. Yeah. I mean, you can be seated at a restaurant with your child and be served a glass of wine. Yeah. What's that?
I only get kicked out with my 15-month-old when I go to the bar.
Right. You can't share a bar stool with your toddler, right?
Which,
short of that.
Every time.
The OLCC is so confusing. How they do Yeah.
Right.
If you're a veteran.
Right. Unlike what we do, which is completely clear.
That's the next item.
In terms of the design guidelines, I didn't put all of our design guidelines up here on the screen. But as I mentioned, there's an application process. They submit detailed designs to us, a demonstration of public outreach, and that programming. And then their designs need to comply with our guidelines. Again, we're not ahead of the curve here. This is something that all other cities are doing, so we borrowed heavily from the design guidelines from San Francisco and New York. They are very much based on safety and functionality. And you know, I'll talk about this a little bit later. They don't ask for certain aesthetic elements. And you know, I mean, I think part of it is to keep it open, to allow that flexibility, to be able to encourage a variety of different designs. I think the key things to point out, obviously, we want to make sure that the stormwater flow is not impeded, pedestrian through zones that comply with the ADA are maintained. The facility is flush with the curb for at least 12 feet. It's more for wheelchair access. That hasn't really been an issue. Physical barriers built along the street side, and then the facility doesn't extend more than 7 feet from the curb line. And actually, with that one, I feel like we will probably suggest that it be 6 feet. We normally allow a 2-foot shy zone between anything physical and the travel zone, specifically when you're talking about buses, where there are mirrors, trucks, with the curvature of the road. So I've been telling applicants, let's err on the side of 6 feet, because I can see that one being changed if we do move forward. Initial feedback. oh, that's too bad. The map doesn't show up. You can see those very faint little blue dots there and the orange, just to give you a sense of where we've been receiving interest from businesses. Hmm. So there's been about 17 some inquiries, 3 installations. And we'll go through those in a second. We would say generally probably equal positive and critical comments so far. I wouldn't say an extensive number of comments. Definitely this idea of improves the vitality of the street, adds additional cafe seating. People love sitting outside in cafes here in Portland. There's not a whole lot of places where we can do that. Negative, mostly safety concerns. As someone who also runs bike parking with PBOT and the bike corrals, where we place the corrals on the bike parking on the street, very similar concerns we're hearing from the public. This idea of placing bikes and people on the roadway and concerns about that. And the inquiries thus far have largely been restaurants, bars, and coffee shops. And probably most of them, I think, looking to extend a cafe seating application. So the first installation was outside of WAFU's Southeast Division, about 31st, 32nd Avenue. We were working with Kurt Huffman of Chef's Table. The installation is 20 feet long, which includes a cafe seating permit, mostly wood decking and railing. And they want their permit to expire as of October 21st. Partly it's weather-related, partly it's conversations with the neighborhood and adjacent businesses as well. So Kurt tells me the platform costs $2,300 to build and design, his furniture $800. I think they were using some of their existing furniture. And permit costs $800 for this one.
So it looks like, I mean, this would obviously be used sort of seasonally, right? And it's required that they be removable?
Yes, absolutely.
Is the intent that when the permit is done in October 21st for this person, right? Do they store it somewhere?
Yeah, and I apologize. That's probably a very key point. In the maintenance agreement or in the encroachment permit, very clear that these things have to be removable for utility work that we might have, street paving. Imagine, you know, snow season like 2008, you know, something like that. And then we are open in terms of the duration that they sit on the street. And so, but if it's going to be seasonal, then absolutely they need to remove it and they need to have a place to store it.
So they reapply the following year if they want to do it again?
And the idea is, again, that this would be annual based permits, very similar to existing cafe seating or other sorts of,
And the construction of it is up to the person that is pulling the permit, right? These aren't like supply. There's not like a city design for the thing, right?
No. Again, another key point. So the applicant is responsible for all design costs, construction, permit costs, maintenance, and removal. So it's at no cost to the city except for very minor list of programmatic fear.
So this could sit out here. I mean, if they decided to, they could just leave it out there for the whole year after year, right? I mean, it could end up being permanently out there, right? And all that would be subjected to weather.
With annual approval by the city.
Okay, so at some point, somebody's thing deteriorates enough.
Yeah, so if we went along with that with that model, the city would have teeth every year to either approve or deny an extension of an application. Yeah.
So you might want some language added in your program about maintenance just so you have teeth to pull an application because it hasn't been maintained to that point.
Right.
There's very detailed language about making sure that they, you know, if PBOT for any reason sees that it's not being maintained to a certain standard, then it's out. Yeah. So
it seems like you'd want some language that regulates this seasonal versus annual thing, because it occurs to me that most annual applicants are going to use it 5 months, you know, May through October, and then it'll be vacant for 7 months,
I don't know. I think there could be a certain type of applicant, like a florist shop or something, that might not have tables and chairs out there that might use it for another purpose.
I can see that, but for the ones that are used for spillover on a restaurant seating or bar or whatever food service it is.
Well, and then there's people can't smoke inside anymore, so you could see in bar situations where they would have that open all year round. They put a couple heat lamps in there.
It seems like it'd be a blight on a neighborhood to have four of these lined up in an area that aren't being used for a five-month period. Is there a way to regulate that through some language and through some choices or the way that you evaluate the application so that you can say, okay, this is this type of business and this is how many months? You know, you say you want an annual permit, but we know you're only going to use it for 5 months. It's going to sit there for seven. How do you regulate that? I mean, it just seems like that's something you want to consider.
It's hard. You know, I'll go through on some of the other slides to show you some of the images from San Francisco. And it is very obvious that we pretty much, and this is the Mississippi pizza, we've got one type of design that's been installed in Portland for the pilot. It's this wood railing. It's the wood decking. And it's rather cheap compared to what we've seen in San Francisco, Philadelphia, New York.
I actually drove by the one on Everett 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Just noticed it because, you know.
Yeah. We also
and my first thought was, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm in a suburban, and if I was texting and swerved into that thing, I'd kill eight people.
You might be a bit surprised, though, because I think with this being a pilot program, so, for instance, GBD was a client of ours came. We had a design competition in the office for it. So I think if it becomes something that's seriously done and is really has some traction, you're going to see the design level of these and quality kind of amped up.
Yeah, I agree. It just adds a whole different layer to the urban fabric, and these are becoming very popular in other cities. There was just a whole seminar.
I love the idea. I'm just saying.
For them at the ASLA convention, and I just think that people take them seriously. I don't think they're just going to be junked up, and I think the permit can always be revoked if that's the case. So I guess I would hate to just kind of put a damper on something that's very exciting for the city.
Well, I think the question would be, and I'm noticing this is permanently on. do we, because it's in the right of way, it's part of the public, you know, improvements, we require the buildings that are right across from them to have a certain level of integrity in terms of materiality. Does that extend to these? And clearly, this is a much more casual kind of do what you will sort of thing. You build them out of wood, right?
Well, there's a dumpster there in the bottom line.
Yeah, some of them are very beautiful with cable railing and.
Right.
This one on the right is very
I think
nice.
The range is exciting, and from a design streetscape element, you know, having a lot of liberty, I think, is probably a healthy thing.
Right, but, you know, the way we do that, well, we think the same thing for our buildings, and the way that we do that is we just say that buildings have to, or the materials have to be, and what are the words, enduring and long-lasting? Or
permanence and quality.
Thank you. Permanence and quality, and my question would be, do our requirements for the rest of the things that make the pedestrian environment in terms of permanence and quality extend to these?
Well, we certainly can't say permanent.
Yeah, because it's a temporary feature.
Yeah. Maybe
but you could say quality.
Relatively.
But I mean, again, I think the key, though, is you got to think about the use, and it's got to be reasonably built. Or because a lot of these cases, I think the restaurants, there's no point in having them all year long because they're not even seeing that they're going to use them. So, for instance, the restaurant operator that came to us said, you know, I'm going to do it maybe at the most 6 months out of the year. And, yeah, they're going to be stored somewhere in the other times.
Right.
And so it just has to be easy to move, disassemble, can't be too expensive because they're not making a ton of cash off of that extra seating.
And I think Oven and Shaker has taken theirs down recently. Haven't they?
Looks like they're 3 days for me to do it.
I have not been notified of that. I know that the permit extended until the 21st.
Oh, okay.
That's the other key. But does it, out of curiosity, does it matter?
Whether or not they
through their agreement, if they take it down early, you all of a sudden just get extra parking.
Exactly.
And the first thing that comes to my head in that regard is that, like if I was a neighboring retailer and I'm missing three parking stalls in front of my shop now during the prime season, but in the rainy season, now I've got an empty street front improvement that somebody's not using. They have a permit for it all year, but they're not going to use it, and it's taking up three parking stalls for my potential customers who want to park close because it's pouring rain, and now they're going to just drive by my place down the road.
Well, one thing that we definitely have to talk about internally when we do this evaluation process is what's the popularity going to be of this program, and what are we talking about in terms of the extent across the city? So,
what do you anticipate? Because I wrote a little note here. I said, what's the business owner awareness of this program? Because I would imagine it'd be really popular.
Yeah. One thing, what I've been telling people who've been inquiring is, in terms of fees, so here's some more images, and then here you can sort of, these two slides, see some of the comparison of other places. So in terms of different fees, what we're looking at, and again, this is a pilot, so we just needed to use our existing fee structure. Essentially, permit costs are from $800 to $1,300. And that include Oven and Shaker had to pay back the meter revenue loss. Where was I going with that? Part of the thing is that I've told people, look, this pilot project, the fees are cheap. This is like your Comcast 3-month special. Expect that the fees are going to go way up, because what we've heard is that for a restaurant, if you're establishing a restaurant, it's about $10,000 per seat is what I've heard to construct. So if they're only putting in $2,500 for the facility, another $1,500 for the furniture, and then maybe $1,500 for the park. It's not a whole lot of money on 20 feet, a 15-person capacity. So we definitely feel that the fees for this would need to be bumped up.
Oh, they're making $10,000. No,
normally it costs
$1,000 interior
per seat. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So the cost per seat on the space is a lot lower.
Right.
Yeah.
$200 per seat as opposed to $10,000.
Is there a notification process for neighbors, like neighboring businesses saying, hey, so-and-so's applied for this in your neighborhood and you can comment?
Right. In San Francisco, they have a public notice system like that where there's something that's actually attached, very similar to our liquor license that we see here. Again, for this pilot project, all we said was demonstrate public outreach. Demonstrate to us, like basically we'll know it when we see it. We didn't want to put too many hoops for people to jump over because it was such a short window, and mm-hmm. we needed to get something on the ground so we could have this conversation essentially. So I do feel like that will probably have to be beefed up. And then again, going back to this question of how many street seats are you going to allow on a block? Kurt is already talking about Oven and Shaker. Oh, wouldn't it be great if there was a parklet facility that extended the entire block? Maybe for some, not so. So those are the conversations we still need to have and think about.
One of the things that occurred to me is that these are a barrier to crossing the street. You're supposed to only cross at crosswalks. So in one sense,
I wondered where you're going with that.
Yeah. I mean, if right. I
yeah.
Are you thinking about Yamhill Street?
Yeah.
So those planters on the sidewalk. They
yeah.
Parklets.
Well, no, I was thinking like that was part of the whole design of the light rail thing through downtown, was including these kind of stormwater planters here in the South Mall along the edges of the sidewalks that would grow up to keep people from, and one of the advantages was that it would keep people from going out into where all the buses and things are at mid-block. Mm. So, yeah, I guess it's prohibiting people from doing what they shouldn't be doing anyway, right?
I think I could imagine these parklets mixed in with bike corrals and then just parking, and then just sort of mixing it up a lot more. When I was in Arizona, I saw a lot of bike corrals mixed with parallel parking and planting islands in between all along the sidewalk. And it was just very successful. Well, I was at ASU, but there was tons of bikes, but that was just really successful to see that mixed up that way. And if you just kind of imagine those planting islands being sort of expanded to these parklets, it could be a really nice mix of elements.
If you look at Barcelona or Florence, I mean, the Rambla is like a mile long parklet with...
Yeah,
right.
They have little cars and Vespas running by, not Suburbans.
Well, maybe with more parklets, we'll get more Vespas.
People slow down.
Yeah, there's absolutely the traffic calming benefits. I mean, I would say, again, we only have these three examples, and Wafu and an Oven and Shaker are the exact it's the same owner, so they basically took the same. So we really only have two designs to look at. Mississippi Pizza, again, same railing and so forth, but they made it creative by having, not sure if anyone's seen it yet, this large giraffe right in the middle of the facility. They've got these bathtub and shower with running water. They are not trying to fit as many people as they possibly can there. There's actually very few seats compared to the number of sort of attractions. I would say we, again, so aesthetically, we're not so pleased with what we've seen so far. I do like the enthusiasm we're hearing from the neighborhood, and I think that's really exciting. These are just some of the there's a UCLA put out a toolkit for parklets, sort of looking at best practices and things like that. So they say provide safety standards, but don't stifle design, encourage creativity. One thing that they mentioned in there that New York did, which we are very interested in starting as soon as possible, is reaching out to the design community, either there being architectural interns or whatever the case might be. You mentioned a design competition. And trying to develop some very detailed design concepts that could be available to applicants, because good design costs money. And that was the one thing that I saw with these three installations. They were very interested in getting something on the ground as soon as possible. And so they would just take whatever's there. And that's where I think we start seeing the compromises on the quality of the design and the quality of the material. So if there was something, designs that were already developed to encourage a higher level of design.
A menu of design options.
Yeah. So that's something that we would like to do. And then I am very interested in language that we might be able to add to the design guidelines in terms of material, quality of materials and things like that.
How much enclosure is allowed? Like, could you tent this whole thing off and make it a...
Yeah, Mississippi Pizza actually has, if you're driving north, the south part of their facility has a bit of a cover on it, and we're nervous about visible sort of permanence, if you will. So being able to see the parked car that's next, being able to see the pedestrian that may be crossing mid-block. So I think we've added this element of vertical elements being encouraged in the facility just for drivers, for safety. But if it was totally tented in, then I think we might have some safety concerns.
You might also start getting food carts. You might start getting food carts, too. Okay.
The other thing is that we don't mandate landscaping. And you really do see landscaping in almost all of these other examples. And I think it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And it's something that I think we need to...
Can you scroll to the second page of your...
Second page?
This one? Next one. That one. The image on the far left.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at that, and I'm thinking, well, if let's say I have a restaurant or cafe that has an awning that goes out over the standard sidewalk section, and I want to put seating there, but give the pedestrian a route around my seating, so I've bumped out into the parking lane and created an actual corridor where I can walk.
Oh.
So I'm funneling traffic, pedestrian traffic, around my seating that's close to the building.
It would
under an awning.
It wouldn't comply with
ADA.
Are
you going to regulate that? I mean, that to me, that looks like an application where you're creating more wider pedestrian way.
Why would it not comply with ADA?
Hold on. Are you saying that this one on the far left?
Yeah. I mean, so basically what I've done here is I've added
sidewalk.
4 feet of pedestran corridor.
Yeah.
There's no furniture.
But my understanding is that the ADA through zone had to be straight through, and that you can only meander around, the through zone can only count, let's say you're 6 feet, in certain areas where there might be a tree or, a mailbox or something, but for very short periods.
Yeah, the pedestrian.
And that was for...
I was just going to say the pedestrian through zone is very well defined in the sidewalk, so that has to stay open.
Yeah.
So there's no way someone could.
Well, I think that's what Jeff's asking. Could you?
That's what I'm asking.
Could it be a tool for that?
I mean, in the example on the right, if they shove those tables that are on the parking aisle into the sidewalk and let the pedestrians go around, there might be more options there.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would get huge pushback from our pedestrian coordinator. I don't even think that it's, I don't think it would comply.
Well, aren't you requiring seating in the, on the little pop-out?
Are we requiring seating?
You're not requiring seating.
We are not requiring.
Oh, okay. So calling it street seats is just...
Street seats, again, just to, because we imagine that there could be pushback given the fact that these aren't parks. Yeah,
I gotcha. Okay.
We're not adding public. So that, and
it's a great idea.
That's really all I had for you. I just wanted to actually hear that UCLA Parklet Toolkit was the one that I think I included in your materials. I clearly didn't give you the exact address to type in, but
so I did like Jeff's point about having to use it and occupy it. You know, so it's not, I mean, somebody could apply and realize, God, it's a way bigger hassle for me to take this apart every year and store it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot I could do with the design of this thing if I could just leave it there all year. But I'm not going to use it all year. So I'll just pay the permit fee for the annual and be able to just leave it there. And that seems like that might be missing the point, too, because you're just taking up public right-of-way for no use.
Yeah, sure. That was the point.
Like you said, Jeff, the high season of other retailers is December.
Right.
Lead up around
you
there.
You want the spot back.
6, 8, 10 spots empty around Barnes & Noble or something.
Yeah.
Well, and a couple of cities did have six-month permits. Montreal and New York had October.
And it's partly because of the snow.
What about somebody who wants to use it for a weekend event or something like that where they get a short permit? I'm thinking it was an example where NATO, the market building down in Chinatown, mm-hmm. has one of these things that they keep in storage in the building, let's just say scenario. And all the tenants in that building have the opportunity to get a weekend permit, a one-day permit.
Hmm.
Let's say I have an office of 20 people and I want to have my open house spill out into the street.
Mm-hmm.
And I know NATO's got one of these things down in the basement.
Hmm.
And I can snap it together in a day with a crew.
I mean,
can I pull a permit to put it out there for 2 days?
I mean, we do allow that, for example, with event bike parking, right? We have an existing permit for the use of a parking lane. So we use that existing permit, and then we have the allowable use of putting bike racks in the street. So if we already allow these, mm-hmm. and then we have that permit, so I could see that being an option, I mean, unless there was a reason why that wouldn't want to be encouraged. The only thing I want to throw out there, I do wonder if part of the reason we're seeing, I mean, San Francisco's a different city, but because these are permanent, there's more of an investment in the materials and the quality. And so especially that, you know, that the curved one we were looking at earlier, mm-hmm. I mean, these are...
Yeah.
So I wonder if there's, you know, a detriment to the quality and the aesthetics,
sure.
if we're encouraging
absolutely.
Really short.
Because they have to be taken down every 6 months.
Yeah.
I mean, I would imagine you're regulating that, though, with a standard that you have to be at this level of standard. And if you can put that together in a day and keep it up and take it down in 3 days, go for it.
Right.
I'm also thinking of, you know, I'm John Carroll and my McKenzie project. I want to add some owner amenity out in front of the building. It's space, you know. Can I pull a permit to do that?
Mm.
And it's perpetual forever?
Yeah. Again, sort of this idea of how much parking we're
allocating. If you're in a nice big hotel, you know, the Benson downtown, they
mm-hmm.
pour those out on Broadway.
We have been in front of the Portland Businesses Alliance to talk about parking, particularly with the launch of this pilot project, with increasing number of applications for on-street bike corrals, for bike share, which is coming soon, and you know the implications on the parking stock. So we definitely don't have an answer to this. Again, it's something like you want to encourage it, but not too much.
There's standards that restrict it, like within certain types of transportation facilities. Like, is it just side streets, principal arterials?
Right.
I mean, are those things that you're going to regulate?
Yeah, we don't have any.
I mean, I just think most retailers value the parking stall over it's, and so I think it's unusual for someone to want to do this. And they, you know, there'd have to be a good reason to actually go out and build something. So I can't imagine these completely taking over all of the parking stalls.
It's kind of self-balancing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So in terms of numbers, right, San Francisco, I think, has 38 on the ground right now. And they've been doing this for the past at least four years, something.
Well,
so,
they said Montreal at 90. Montreal is a quarter of the size.
Huge.
And my understanding, I had heard that Montreal didn't have a permit system initially. They only just created one. So I think part of it was because anyone could do it.
No
and
wonder.
It was just, yeah.
Just Canadians.
Montreal.
Can I throw a couple observations on the table?
The chair recognizes Mr. Heron.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And so we'll certainly follow up and talk. But mm-hmm. just a couple things let you know you may not be aware of, and I don't know if you're even aware of. Mm-hmm. I assume you are. We have a BDS as an intergovernmental agreement with PBOT, and we do kind of a quasi-informal design review of food carts in the right-of-way. So part of that permit process, right now Dina Dister's doing it, used to be Terry,
okay.
Where basically I or another member of my staff would get a quick sketch of a cart, a smaller push cart. I have something to say about those across the street, too. But one that would be in the furnishing zone. So they'd have to submit a site plan, they'd have to locate the light pole, they'd have to locate the trash bin, and it would have to be a certain size. And part of our quasi-design review would be basically, this is something in the public right-of-way. It should have some layer of quality and permanence to it. We've rejected something put together with not much more than tinfoil. I mean, a true piece of something on wheels. We've done things like, often some of the contraptions just have hitches on them. We've required the hitches to be removed, the propane tank be screened, the coolers to be tidied, caster wheels were really popular. Just a really light design review overlay, if you will. We didn't charge a fee for it. We did not. Mm-hmm. It was just intergovernmental. We felt like that was important. And this commission actually saw that once upon a time. And internally, we generated a small design guideline booklet that basically said, do a cart like this, don't do a cart like this to the new cart venturer in the right-of-way. Now, that we don't get a lot of those anymore, other than we recently just got cargo bike people where they have the front end of their cargo bike retrofitted into a soda fountain or an ice cream stand, put an umbrella on it, get a spot, you got a permit, you're good to go. Those rubber stamp all day. But it's the homemade built ones. Now, albeit these are larger scale and arguably simpler, but the observation I would make, I think, gets to the point of permanently on the site. One of the requirements of those ones in the right-of-way is they're gone every night. They don't stay overnight. They come in the morning and then they go away. Yeah, there's a couple burrito carts that are around town and they got their spot outside the Portland building or whatever, and they make a good living, but it goes away, back of a truck, flatbed, and it moves. The one observation I would make about that in general is, if you want to know what it's like to have something that's unregulated, look at the food carts across the street. So the city of Portland does not regulate them. They're on private property, but they're vehicles. They're on wheels. Some of those wheels are flat. We should be requiring them to be inflated. And there was a moment where all of a sudden decks, seating, covers started getting glued onto these things. It triggered building permits, it triggers ADA. We quickly made them go away, as long as it's hanging off the cart. So I would, one test of something might be, I know you've seen how busy it is out there. Could a bunch of those food cart owners get together and build a whole 200-foot frontage of these to provide seating across from the carts? Now, depending on your cart owner that designs it, I could see different styles and qualities.
That's when you get the PBA and the Oregon Restaurant Association.
Right. So I guess my observation is it's a wonderful program that on one level you don't want to regulate.
Yeah, it was just
you know, Alberta Street has no design overlay, and many aspects of it, it works just fine.
Right.
Where one could argue once you do the design overlay, we micromanage and we dumb down design. So. These seem like just another example. So my humble opinion, I think you nip it in the bud on the front end and you put together a design guideline set. Maybe it comes back to the commission as an idea. I could give you the one we use for the smaller versions. And it could be just as simple as don't do this, do something like this, or here's a kit of parts, or it, you know, no horizontal can project above a 42-inch railing height.
Can there be prejudice about what's opposite it? I mean, does it have to have a building?
Or permit pole?
Maybe, well, that's why I'm just throwing out.
On the other side of the sidewalk? You know what I'm saying? Like, no. Those are not buildings.
But I would also... permit pole by a permanent established business with real estate or established...
I mean...
So what if there was just one, though, across from the cars and they all shared it? Is that
I'm
a, I mean, that's why
I'm not saying I have a problem.
No, I know, but I guess
it's well, I'm just kind of getting the thing about what the problem with that. No, sorry, I don't know where you're supposed to store the thing, but there's no place to store this deck inside those food carts. I mean, I guess it could be taken off site,
but you're not going to store those in restaurants yeah, either. You're storing true. Them in well, storage.
Couldn't any owner, though, have a problem with any other business building one of these temporary facilities, like directly across the sidewalk, because it's screening the view of their retail business? So, I mean, I guess in my mind, I was thinking the only people that would be doing it would be the owners directly across the sidewalk yeah. from the temporary. Mm-hmm. I mean, could you regulate it like that and say it's only available to the
people? Yeah. No, I mean, so right now it's only the immediately adjacent property owner and business owner. Same thing with the bike corrals, too. Yeah. But, you know, the funny thing about the food carts...
Well, there's one business owner. One person right. owns that lot.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and so Alder, between 9th and 10th...
You already got a call.
Would No, it would... Okay, from PBOS point yeah. of view... perfect for this because if you think about the pedestrian right of way, there's no place. The lines, there's the through zone is absolutely compromised. And so we were sort of initially thinking that would be a great idea.
Well,
so it always depends on your vantage point, right?
Yeah. Well, and I guess going back to kind of all of these concerns, it's just maybe a general somewhat thought process on mapping on what are the ideal places that PBOT thinks these should be and kind of running it through some other groups for just vetting and encouraging more of that. And then maybe it's only one per street for a while before you consider just putting a whole street in. And you could start like until they get disseminated throughout the city, yeah. you know, or maybe there's one street in the city right now you could possibly see the entire street being it, but that's it. Yeah. You know, that's the one target area, and I don't know where that is, but that's all you're going to allow if that's going to happen.
I think one way in which San Francisco sort of deals with this is that they release an RFP and people apply, there's a deadline, and then you have all your applications that you're reviewing at one time.
Mm-hmm.
So that allows some...
That ups competition.
Yeah, competition, exactly. If you have a limited number of spots, it also lets you see the universe rather than, you know, rather than it being a first come, first serve. Mm-hmm. So that might address it without being too...
I would also, you know, back to your kind of design competition or booklet, the AIA may be willing to kind of do something to kind of help out and set something up or have a mini design competition with architectural interns. And so you might be able to get some great work out of that group.
I'd also like to add, I think, though the terms are quality and permanence, I don't necessarily think that permanence means in the same place. So, I mean...
Correct. That in that guideline, sorry, there, right. that we meant to just say that permanence in material,
yeah.
not permanence so, in place. We right. typically review buildings that don't move, but permanence is really meant to be material permanence.
Yeah, it doesn't rot away.
Right.
So, I mean, I could see that. I could see you being able to kind of take these things apart, move them, and meet that criteria, but also having it built out of things that aren't, you know, what if somebody made one of these out of cardboard?
Right.
I mean, what prevents that? Anything?
Right.
Styrofoam. No, in our design guidelines, actually, yeah. I don't. I mean,
right.
it's, again, we kept it vague because we wanted to.
Totally.
We knew it was a yeah. short period.
Seems like use would want to have to be regulated, too, the use and the construction quality. And the, I mean, is it going to be a, you said, pedestrian corridor couldn't go down this the scenario with all the food carts? I could see popping out a whole block for 7 feet from the curb, making it ADA
smoke deck
compliant, so that edge is smooth, and the load bearing and tactile surfaces and all these issues, and
right.
bring the pedestrian way behind the lines in front of the food carts.
It does seem, though, you want to leave
Seems
it
like
open.
It's a tool in that regard.
But I think you also want to leave it open enough that ideas evolve and just kind of allow that sort of cultivation of ideas. And I think the RFP idea is a really good one.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking here online, just Google images, you know, of parklets. And there's a health club that puts their spinning cycles out into the little thing there in
and
front of the gym.
It's actually one of the sections in this toolkit guide is active parklets. So this, I didn't quite understand it. But the other thing I wanted to say, you had mentioned the smoking issue. So San Francisco and New York banned smoking. And I have been
looking in these spaces.
And so I have been looking to see how exactly you would do that. And my understanding is that under code,
how would you enforce it is the thing. I mean, it's, I just, you know.
But even what authority would we have to do that?
Yeah.
You can do it within 10 feet of your building entrances per
but this is a building entrance.
But
maybe that's how. It's the entry onto
but
it.
It's not, it's,
I don't know.
Here is public space.
Well, I have that little.
Here is public space. So you would have to ban smoking in a public space. I mean,
no, but is it public if now, and granted it's in the right of way, but at the same time it's being permitted to a private entity that's like serving, let's say it's a restaurant. So they're, you're, it's not like anybody's allowed to just sit there. It's not public. That's why it's not a parklet. So yes, now it's gone
it's
private.
Actually public, though.
It is public. So we've looked into this just, and I know that the folks who work on the cafe seating permits have had this question. Well, what is it about a cafe seating permit that actually allows exclusive use by their patrons? Right? So, because I was hoping we could find some medium ground. We could still allow table service. We could still allow you to drink a beer out there, but it could also be public or something. And it, the language is very vague. So it's not, it is public. It is public right of way, and we, yeah. So,
can you smoke in public seating on the sidewalk right now?
No, because it's within 10 feet. Most of them are within 10 feet of an entrance, and so for the state, you know, smoking law, it doesn't comply. But for example, like River Place, right, where you have your cafe seating, that's easily beyond 10 feet. Can you smoke? I just, I don't have those answers, but I don't know how we would have the authority.
Yeah.
My observation, just from a building permit standpoint, my observation is as soon as that law went into effect, no smoking within 10 feet of the entrance.
Patios open everywhere.
We started getting all these applications for these little 6x10 sheds with a roof so you could smoke a cigarette and not get wet.
Yep.
I would just throw it out there. Most of these will be 10 feet from the main entrance.
Yep.
Most of our sidewalks are at least that wide.
This is going to be your smoking corral.
Well, for me, I think it gets back to why you don't allow cover. Or when the heat lamps come out, or the umbrellas come out, it turns into a an easy way to grab a smoke and hang out. And maybe we decide to regulate that or not. I'm not necessarily going to be biased. I don't smoke, but that's something to think about.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
One thing that'd be really useful is to see maybe what some of the least successful ones of these are, like the ones that are kind of pushing.
Mm.
Yeah, this one was. Here's what you can get.
What do you? I'm following.
Some guys who lay down sod.
Oh well, that's different because the images you're seeing there are because this idea of parklets really came from Parking Day. So Parking Day is always that first Friday in September. Anyone can use an use of a parking lane to take up a parking space and create a park. And so they roll down sod, they put down a bench, they put a piano, or you know, whatever things might be.
Well, most of these images actually are really cool. I mean, there's
wouldn't allow sod.
One out of 20 is kind of like, huh?
Like it'd be interesting to look at that and understand, what is it? Is there a problem here?
Planter.
And what is it? How do you about it? Okay.
And I do think that Evan and Shaker and Wafu, if we mandated landscaping, that would help.
Yeah.
You know, it's the brackets that they're using to put the railing into the post aren't even the same size as the rail. But again, those little details, and I think this goes back to your point about like what kind of review we have for the detailed designs. It might be a benefit.
I just think my experience coming upon these in the city has always been fun. And it's a joyful experience, and people are very creative with them. I know we're seeing like the possible downsides to it, but I think there's a lot of positives. And I think the smoking thing, I mean, that really just sort of depends on the clientele of who's putting it in. So, you know, if it's a, you know, a, I mean, I have a bar that's like a everyone just sits out on the sidewalk and smokes all night and, on 28th, which is gross. But, you know, I mean, I think it just it depends on where they go in and what's next to my house. Both. That's around my bagels.
Granted, I'm not there, like, all the time, but I've been by Oven and Shaker a lot. And you're right, it's not the best one, but it is surprising and kind of different. And I don't see a ton of people hanging out there smoking. Mm-hmm. So it, you might be right back to the, it, different places are going to attract
on the east side,
different.
And all of a sudden, it's just chain smoking out there on the
sidewalk. And maybe that works for those areas. I mean, I'm not a smoker either, but people do need a place to smoke if they're smokers. So.
I mean, I like that too. I mean, I think that's the success of it, you know, is that kind of freedom and liberty for it to get quirky. And but it's really interesting how like, we are so uptight about the stuff that's happening in the right of way.
Right. And then all of a sudden, like,
are the boys on
get out some pallets and umbrellas.
You know, and then we're like,
that washer's too big.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's just like, go for it, you know?
Well, I think the fact, though, that it's an annual thing versus it's going to be there for the next 20, 50, 100 years.
Can you deny you know, you go, well, you built that last year. We can't let you do that this year. Is that going to be it? Condition for denying a permit because the unit they built the year before wasn't adequate? I mean,
right. So if we allowed it the first time around and then we felt like we had design improvements
issues
that we needed.
Yeah.
I mean, I absolutely think that you know, that would be something that we'd want to include.
Probably going to evolve
a little
bit.
I think if you did the RFP thing and every year your application was re-upped.
Yeah.
Like, you
I
didn't
agree.
Just automatically get it. You're up in competition again. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to be encouraged to maintain. They're going to be encouraged to improve. And
I guess I don't understand the RFP thing, because if you're saying only these places in the city have designated, you know, parklet capability, isn't that what you said? You were going to develop some sort of a map?
Nope. Just there's a maximum of 15.
And that was only for the pilot project.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I misunderstood.
And that was just the interest. And that is an interesting point in terms of the RFP, because I think my understanding is that the RFP has been for new locations.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. But you could do something different.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I imagine in San Francisco, they're a bit more year-round. I mean, they don't have great weather, but they have better weather.
And again, if they're popular and successful, you're probably going to re-up their application. But if they're derelict and they're not being used and they try to apply again, then it might be an easy way to say, yeah, no,
yeah,
make the mustard.
Right.
Cut the mustard.
Right.
Or make it.
Okay.
Whatever.
Any other comments for the good of the order? Concerns?
Interesting.
But I agree.
I think it's cool.
I agree with Jane. When I go around and see these things, it's really exciting. So
yeah.
I hope we don't regulate them too much right out of the gates. I like the approach you're taking so far. Let the organic growth kind of occur, and then it becomes problematic. Mm-hmm. I guess you can assess it at that point.
It would be great just to invite Sarah back for an update in a year. Let's see how it's going.
Fun.
Or start taking pictures and send them to me. You know, here's what's a good one, here's a bad one.
That should not make it through the RFP next year.
How do we avoid designs like this?
As one restaurant put it, they're like, well, what if we start seeing mannequins being placed out there? I'm like, mannequins? Who the hell?
Wow.
You never know.
Vintage clothing shop.
Yeah. What if
dress
you do?
Mannequins.
I don't know. Maybe it'd be fun.
Yeah, no,
and they gather clothes.
But if you guys haven't seen the Mississippi Pizza one, it's kind of funky and funny. There's little you saw the little flower pots on top of little daisies coming out. I actually grabbed one and they're all screwed in weird ways.
I know. Because one of our traffic engineers, he's like, what do you think about these flower pots? I immediately contacted the owner. They are attached to the railing. Yes. Okay. All right. We can all stop panicking now.
All right.
Thanks,
all right. Thank you all.
Thanks.